the lease was up, that bridge will pay for accommodation because the lease is still with SAS. And once we take over that lease, SAS will transfer that money across to us. So that's why, just to explain, that's why you'll see on the first page of the presentation, 5 areas and only 4 areas costed. But I'll just hand over to the CFO to give you a breakdown of the administration costs.
The administration budget is structured as follows. There's departmental management, which is 5.3 million. Corporate services, 10.7 million. Financial administration, 8.9 million. And internal audit, 3.4 million. And as I've mentioned before, this is the basic infrastructure that is required for every department to be able to support its service delivery programs. And in the case of a smaller department like ourselves, it is very difficult to maintain that infrastructure because if your core businesses are coming from a low base, it is difficult to have adequate budget for the administration budget, for administrative support. But we managed to restructure our internal processes to make sure that functions that can be related to core businesses are moved to core businesses. So we managed to deal with the bare minimum here of 28.3 million. That is down from the previous year by 30%, which was 40.5 million. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Some questions. Just two issues on governance, just to get assurance from the Secretary and the CFO. The one issue relates to the question of the Audit Committee. The AG indicated to us that Secretary wants to use ITAD's Audit Committee. My own view would be, the AG must speak for himself, according to the report that we received from ITAD, the Audit Committee only met 2 times the last annual cycle and so on. And I'm just wondering, would it be really in the interest of the Secretary to use their own, another department's Audit Committee? I know smaller departments do it, but wouldn't it be more prudent in terms of financial management to have your own Audit Committee? I just want to have a comment on that. And then there's one item. Remember, the Minister of Finance in the budget and the President made it very clear in terms of spending patterns, the question of consultants. There is a quite increase in terms of consultants. And we as a committee, we're going to look very critically at it because the police also has got that item there. Who's those consultants and what are they going to be used for? Because you have now an increase in your staff complement, so you must be able to do the work. What can we get the sense there? Other members?
I'll ask Mr. Ndau to just speak about the internal audit because we are appointing, although we might be using the same people, we're appointing it as our own committee, but I think Mr. Ndau will basically brief you on that. On the consultants, I think we don't make use of consultants to do work. I think that one of the things, and it looks high in an organization like the Secretariat, I think what may be useful is to provide the committee with a breakdown. Because, for example, travel is listed as consultants. So our travel becomes a consultancy fee. And that's what we're talking about. I think we have one project this year where we would be, and it's the firearm project, where we would be looking at using a consultant to assist with our capacity. Other than that, all the work is being done by the Secretariat staff. And when we talk about consultancies, it's the way that AG defines what is a consultant, rather than that we're getting consultants in to do the work we should be doing. And I think what may be useful for the committee is to provide you with a breakdown of exactly what that consultancy is. So you can see it's not actual consultants. It's like, for example, our travel costs, which, according to the AG, get listed as consultants. And we could provide the committee with that breakdown. I'll just ask Mr. Ndau to talk about the audit committee.
Thank you, Secretary and Honourable Members.
actually doing at the moment, we have engaged the existing current audit committee members of IPIT. But before we even do that, we went through the tech in terms of their qualification and experience with regard to whether they've got relevant experience and qualification needed for our audit committee to be more effective. We are quite satisfied that the experience and qualifications that they have are appropriate and adequate to provide us with an effective oversight role. But we are also engaged the head of internal audit of IPIT, and he actually indicated to me that over the past 12 months for financial year 13 and 14, they actually met in terms of the PFMA. So I think from where we stand, we think that we believe that they have what it takes in order to provide effective oversight role of our organization. And we are hopefully going to finalize the process before the end of this month, which means the first meeting that we're going to have will probably be at the beginning of August. Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you for that. Maybe just on the same issue, in terms of your budget, it's quite clear there is a cost saving in terms of travel and those issues. So good work in terms of the briefcase of the Minister of Finance. But again, the question, if you cut down on those on travelling expenditure, how is it going to affect your ability to do your monitoring of the SAP stations and your interaction with the community police force? I just want to know the balance between cost cutting savings and then on the other issue, ensuring that there's a mandate.
Okay, just on that, I think that we're not necessarily reducing the amount we travel, but how it's not that we are cutting down on the number of trips we undertake, but it's with the new Treasury prescripts being quite strict about what is and isn't allowed in terms of travel, it has reduced our travel budget quite significantly. We also are looking at utilising, I mean, for example, we've purchased certain vehicles ourselves because we were spending a lot on car hire. So last year we purchased vehicles. So it's, we're not looking at necessarily reducing the amount of trips, but rather how we travel as opposed to when we trip, when we travel.
Thank you,
guys. So one last, so when we talk about cost-cutting measures in our administration budget, it is quite a nightmare because even 28%, as far as Treasury is concerned, is a bit high. A department should essentially be at 20%. One of the things we are exploring, and we have been in discussions with IFID about, is both of us are looking at accommodation. IFID has got serious problems around their current accommodation, and we have no lease at the moment with our accommodation. DPW has not signed the lease on our current accommodation, and we have got, you'll see when we come up in the program, very serious security problems at our building. We have had 7 break-ins in the last year in our building. In fact, in the last 6 months, we've had 7 break-ins. We believe it's an inside job within the building, not within the security, but within the building. One of our staff members has been mugged in the lift of the building because the lifts are, because we only occupy 3 floors, the rest of the lifts are occupied by other people. And so we have been looking at relocating. And one of the ideas is to co-locate with IPIT so that we could look at sharing certain things, sharing reception areas, sharing a registry. It would reduce both our administration costs and give us more money to spend on our operations. So that is something that we are exploring with DPW.
Thanks for that info. Members, any questions on this section? We can come back to these issues, but let's continue with the presentations.
Chair, if you look at the section, the administration program in terms of departmental management, the first sub-program is, its purpose is to provide strategic support to the Secretary of Police and an efficient and effective Secretary able to fulfill its mandate. And as I said, that refers predominantly to the Office of the Secretary of Police, which is responsible for effective planning in the Secretariat, the APC, the SRAP plan, planning for and performance planning, and now with the quarterly reports kicking in and us becoming a designated department, those quarterly reports will be done. And effective cooperation between IPIT and the Secretariat, and I think we've discussed that, and we'll provide the chairperson with the reports on the minutes of meetings and the correspondence between ourselves and IPIT regarding those meetings. The performance and the compliance with the PFMA, DPSA, performance management. MinMAC, people would, the new members of the committee, that in terms of the legislation, the secretariat has a support role to support the minister in the performance of MinMAC and the establishment of MinMAC. What we have done over the last year is to develop a reporting format within MinMAC, which allows us to pull all the information that is coming together from the provinces into a single report, which becomes a discussion document at MinMAC on the different priorities, provincial priorities, etc. Strategic and technical advice to the minister, and engagement with government departments through the JTPS cluster. We also sit on the development committee, etc. I'll then just hand over to the Human Corporate Services to take you through the next sub-program.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Corporate Services as a support service to the civilian secretariat for police. Its purpose is to provide a reliable and efficient corporate services to the secretariat that includes the provision of human resource management, human resource development, as well as employee relations, communication and information technology services and auxiliary services. The strategic objectives of corporate services is to provide an effective human resource management and development services, and the following areas are the key priorities: compliance with departmental requirements, the reporting to the Public Service Commission, DPSA, PCETA, Departments of Labor and other relevant departments. Personnel appointed according to the approved establishment, approved human resource management and human resource development plan, policies approved, such as your diversity management, your employee health and wellness, as well as the disciplinary policies. The code of conduct, which are signed by all staff members, approved workplace skills plan, and effective employee health and wellness program to be implemented. Thank you.
Questions? Honourable Kalibana.
We hear so much about, from IPIS, from other of the entities, about staff disappearing. Have you got a career pathing program to, with a view to retaining your staff, or are we going to be hearing in 6 months that your staff are being stolen by other divisions?
It's
not a question, it's a comment. Civilian secretariat from police, some of the members here were not in this police department. And the thing, I saw that just one page, but you are lazy. I cannot really say lazy. I don't understand why you give us abbreviations. IPD, BFMA, DPSA, JCPC, we don't know what that means. To understand that even if you are presenting this, we don't understand because we don't have the things in full. Or maybe you are running short of the paper. I don't know. But please consider the input.
Any other questions?
Maybe just on the abbreviations, our apologies for those abbreviations. It's just that I think that previously the committee had asked us not to present too long a presentation to them. So our apologies that it's a new committee. Even if we have a front page that deals with all the annexes, but we will make sure that those are included in the future. But I don't think it's a question of laziness, it's a question of actually trying to keep the presentation as short as possible, which is what we were requested by the previous portfolio committee, to actually keep our presentations to actually, they said under 40 pages, which is often very difficult, and you'll see this presentation, which is over 40 pages. So it wasn't a question of being lazy, it was a question of trying to keep the presentation short, but our apologies, we will make sure that we include those acronyms in full in future. With regard to staff development, I think that we have a staff retention, a retrenchment policy that we are busy finalising at the moment. staff retention policy that we are busy finalising. It is in line with the Public Service Commission, etc. We also are looking at processes where people reach a ceiling. How can we accommodate people who begin to reach a ceiling and we don't end up losing them because we don't have positions for them? Because I think the difficulty for an organisation like UNPID and the Secretariat is we're not a huge department, so we don't have lots of vacancies coming up. So we need to try and find ways to keep people within the department. At the moment, we've only had, in the last year, one person leaving us, and they left us within 2 months of the appointment. They left us. Other than that, I think we've managed to retain staff, but I think that as we progress, that retention policy is going to have to be looked at very seriously, and also what to do with staff when they reach a ceiling, and there isn't necessarily a position for them above that ceiling, and that's something which we are engaged with DPSA about, what is or isn't allowed in that scenario.
Thanks, Chairperson. The sub-program is Finance Administration. The purpose is to provide Public Finance Management Act compliant financial, accounting, and supply chain services to the Secretariat. The strategic objective is to ensure sound corporate governance and provide Public Finance Management Act compliant supply chain services, asset management services, and PFMA compliant financial accounting services in the Secretariat. The following areas will be prioritized: establishment of SEM committees. Here we're talking about departmental bid adjudication committee and bid evaluation committee. The updated asset register. This is required, one of the records required in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. Demand management plan, procurement plans, the implementation thereof. Improvement of budgeting and spending patterns. As a new department, we need to establish a trend in terms of our spending patterns. Payment to creditors within 30 days. This is what is required in terms of stimulating business in the country. This is a major topic in government, that we should pay our creditors within 30 days. So we need to prioritize that going forward. Midterm review reports, compliance with national treasury processes like the MTF process. The other one that you've mentioned earlier is the establishment of own audit committee. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. On that matter, in the last financial year, the Secretariat underspent by 33% of the previous line budget. Now, the question is for the committee as well. We must prepare our report on Friday and looking forward. The ability of Secretariat to ensure that the budget is spent effectively. We have heard about improvement of budgeting spending patterns, but what internally is there? We've got a budget monitoring committee, their monthly meetings. I just want to get this sense, because sometimes spending patterns is also got to do with capacity in your financial and also maybe in the provinces. So if you can just give us a game plan, how are we going to ensure what is this improvement really means? And, Member Malabasi?
Thank you, Chairperson.
In this sub-program, there are three supply chain management committees that will be established during 2014-2015. What are their rules? What are their functions? Thank you.
Honourable Mafija.
Welcome.
Any other member? Right. Honourable Mabene.
Can I just get a quick recap of all those supply chain management committees? It was a BC, BAC, and? Certifications, okay, thank you.
Thank you. Maybe if those new committees, if you can also maybe give their full names. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Chairperson, with regard to the improvement of spending plans, one challenge that has been with us for a while is that we didn't have our own financial administration system. The plan going forward is that we should have our own financial administration systems with budgetary control and those other qualities that the Chairperson has just mentioned. The challenge in this regard is that we've already established those applications. The application system that's applicable to ourselves is PASS. With the help of the CETA, we do have that system. The challenge is that the supporting infrastructure that is required to be laid by the CETA is hampering this process. And we're hoping that within the next 3 months, the CETA will provide us with the infrastructure to be able to implement our own financial administration system. That is the plan going forward that will alleviate the underspending. With regard to the SCM committees, the bid specification committee looks at the specifications for any product that you require. You have a special committee that will look at that. The adjudication committee, evaluation committee, will then evaluate the bids that came through and recommend to the adjudication committee, which then recommend to the head of department on any bid that's adjudicated. It also depends on your supply chain policy, what kind of authority you give to the adjudication committee. If you allow them to award certain tenders up to a certain amount, they can do that. But generally, it is recommended to the head of department for awarding of those tenders. Those are the main three bid committees of this year. Thank you.
Members, any other questions on the program?
You're welcome to come back at the end, but we're going to continue.
Sorry, just to also say that we need those committees, particularly the bid evaluation committee and the bid adjudication committee, because even if you only have one tender in the year, any irregular expenditure, anything must go through those committees throughout that year. So it's not necessarily, I think we've already identified that we might only have one tender throughout the whole year. It wouldn't be a big tender, but we need those committees for other purposes in terms of the Financial Management Act. And also just to add one other thing on the spending patterns is we're able to now generate monthly reports on our spending, which have to go to the minister. We're now a designated department. Those have to be signed off by the minister. But those reports are also now being discussed at the management meetings to look at how our spending is going, who's underspending, and then we've agreed to have quarterly, not just budget, but budget and performance. We've combined the two because they're interlinked, budget and performance meetings as senior managers, so including all SNS members in the secretariat, which will happen on a quarterly basis. And then for the first time this year, because we became a designated department, each program had to submit their procurement program. So they had to say when they're going to spend, how they're going to spend, and the CFO is now monitoring that. So we're hoping that we will this year. If we look at our spending patterns for the first 2 months, there's already a dramatic improvement from the last period in terms of our spending. So we're hoping that we will, because it has been a real problem in the secretariat, has been the underspend of the year. So we're hoping that we will be able to deal with that.
You mentioned the question of bid specification of bid committee. Just maybe we ask the same question to IFAD and SAPS in terms of, because it also is very important for the bid committees, the question of vetting. Is your top management that's sitting here and all senior managers, are they vetted in terms of the relevant required vetting status? Can you just give us an update on that?
No, Chair, they're not. There has been a request to state security for the vetting. At the moment, it's only specific people that have been vetted, either because they came into the organisation vetted or because, like myself, they had to be vetted before they took up the post. But we have submitted a request to state security to at least fast-track, in particular, the senior management. management, all the staff, but the senior management in particular. And we are going to be appointing a security officer in the next round that is going to, Treasury has given us some additional funding for posts, and one of them will be a security officer that will be able to try and push and fast track that, as well as deal with general security issues in the sector.
I presume the appointments of your top team is subject to their betting being successful. But I just want to give an indication. I mean, the commissioner said people here are fine. Mr. McBride said yes. What is your delegation here today? What is the percentage?
To chair, the percentage is less than 50.
I think from our committee side as well, we just want to urge again, we know it's not your own making, I mean there's other role plays, but I think it's essential that, you know, the integrity of the top management, your provincial head should be, you know, beyond all reasonable doubt, so we need that to be fast-tracked given the superiority, but especially also the bid processes, those people deal with very important contracts, and it's very, you know, just going forward, corporate governance, that is, you know, dealt with. Right, we can continue with it, presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Members. The purpose of the internal audit basically is to provide an internal audit services by conducting compliance and performance audits. And our overall objective is to performing strategic risk-based audits, consulting services directed at improving effectiveness and efficiency of the secretariat operations, risk management and governance processes. The following are the areas are our priorities. So our first priority is a three-year rolling plan. So basically, a three-year rolling plan is the plan covers 3 years, which also includes the audit that will be done in the first year, which is our operational plan. We are also going to issue the reports of the audits that are planned for this current financial year. At the moment, our three-year plan has not yet been approved because we are waiting to finalize the appointment of the audit committee. And once the committee has been approved, has been appointed or been on board, they are going to look into our three-year plan. We also have a risk management policy and strategies, which are almost done, and then the global assessment report. So basically, with regard to global assessment report, we have just recently appointed the risk manager who started this month, and we are planning to have a global assessment workshop this month so that we can have the enterprise risk assessment report for the for this current function.
Honourable members, questions on this subheading? Honourable Marquette.
I think it's a question. I'm not very sure whether the question would be specific on this section, but I just wanted to sensitize myself. I feel I'm getting lost a bit. The relationship between the what I might term or you are the headquarters, the relationship with the provinces, the offices in the provinces, and your staff complement of 114, does it include them? And how do you relate to them in terms of budgets and so on? And what is your control over them in the province? Because I feel if I lose that, then I'm not able to follow as you go on. At least that will give me an idea how. And maybe another question. When you talk about consultants, do you use them, and what do you use them for? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Marquis, other questions from members?
Yeah, the province one is quite a complex relationship, so it probably is important to clarify. We're not like IFIT or SAP, who have branches in the provinces. If you look at the constitution, the secretariat is established in terms of 208 of the constitution that there must be a civilian secretariat for police established. But 206 also gives the provincial MEC the power to have oversight over the police. So you have this function at a national level, but you also have the same function being performed at a provincial level through the NEC. So when we were looking at the Civilian Secretariat for Police Act and restructuring the Civilian Secretariat for Police Act, we really had two routes that we could go. The one was that the Civilian Secretariat for Police established branches in the provinces, and there would be a duplicating function. You'd have us performing oversight functions in the province, and so would the NEC's office be performing the same oversight functions. Or we could come to an agreement with the provinces that we would have a head office and we would work with the provinces when it came to oversight. And we ended up, after a discussion at MINMAC, going for the question of having a civilian secretariat for police at a national level and then working with the provinces at a provincial level in terms of our oversight function. What that means essentially is that in terms of the Civilian Secretariat for Police Act, those provinces are required to align their processes with our processes nationally. They need to establish a provincial secretariat in each province that we can then work with. But they are established under the Office of the MEC and under the Department of Community Safety and Liaison. So their budget comes from the province. Their immediate accountability is to the MEC, because to do anything else would be to interfere with another sphere of government. So essentially, it's an alignment of processes as opposed to us having control over those. And that's why at the beginning of the presentation I mentioned that provincial treasuries, national treasury, ourselves, and the Departments of Community Safety and Liaison have developed a clear set of what we call sector indicators for our sector, which allows us and National Treasury and Provincial Treasury to make sure that each province does align with us and does basically carry out the work that they've committed to us to do, and ourselves to them. And it's quite a difficult relationship, because we have this relationship with them, but we don't have control over their budget, so there isn't that kind of accountability that comes when you control somebody's budget and appointment processes. So it is quite a complex relationship that exists between ourselves and the provinces, which is quite complex. But it's been a lot better when the legislation was first passed. I think there was a bit of scepticism on the part of the Portfolio Committee as to the extent to which provinces would come on board and would actually work with ourselves. And in actual fact, we have found that provinces have been extremely cooperative on the whole, that almost every province has tried at some level to align themselves with the way in which we're structured. All of them have accepted our national monitoring tools, our national station monitoring tools, our national DVA tools. All of them have agreed to participate in the sector indicator process, where they say, we commit ourselves to doing this work with the secretariat at a provincial level. And all of them are actually reporting to us, are submitting their reports to us on a quarterly basis. So we, although it is this complex relationship, and there was a lot of scepticism going in, it seems to be at this point functioning, but it's something which I know the Portfolio Committee felt that they needed to constantly be monitoring to make sure that it was working. But it, as I say, it is a bit of a complex relationship.
Hello, Marky, follow up.
Thank you very much. As a follow up, the way I understand it means you are happy that they are cooperating. It means they are doing you a favor. If I, for instance, become Minister of Community, whatever I've seen, and I try to be difficult, the law will be on my side, not on your side. That's the situation. And if that is the case, if you go monitoring in a province, for instance, must you ask for permission, because you are entering another constituency that is under the MEC. I understand the thing is complex, but how do you work it out? Or would you say an amendment to some act is needed for smooth running? That's why I said it's very difficult for me. If you get to Limpopo, you must first ask, because that is another constituency, and the MEC will say, this is my budget, accountability comes to me. That's why I'm having a bit of, and if an amendment is needed, would you push for that so that everything can move smooth? Thank you.
How many of the provinces are cooperating? I mean, the corridors, you hear 2 out of 9, various numbers. Can you just give us an indication and recommendations on the normal bailing?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I'm actually very, very pleased to have got that clarity from the Secretary of how it's operationally and structurally sort of cascades down. So my question was, because this influences the questions I might ask under Program 2, is firstly my previous question around the resourcing of CPFs wasn't answered, but it might now be negated. If I can just be, just get clarity, so it's up to the provincial secretariats who are convened and run by the MECs. Is it the case that they are the ones who would do the resourcing and the sort of management of CPFs, or is there still some role for the national secretariat? And secondly, in terms of the targets around the establishment of the community safety forums, is that to run from national, the national hub, or is that also devolved to the provincial secretariat? Thank you. Thanks for that, Secretary.
I think that there is a legislative mandate for those provinces to align with ourselves. It's in the legislation that they have to align their strat plans, etc. They have to establish provincial secretariats that cooperate with ourselves. I think that if they refuse to cooperate, as you would say, that we would have some legal basis to challenge those provinces. I suppose that you would equate it to SAPS is a national competency. I suppose you would equate our relations with the provinces a bit to the same as a department which had a national competency and a provincial competency. It's the same kind of relationship that exists. But it doesn't mean that the provinces can just ignore it. It is in the legislation. With regard to us having to ask permission, that is not the case. Policing is a national competency, therefore we as the civilian secretariat for police can walk into any police station and do an oversight visit. We do not require the permission of the NEC. In fact, very often what we're finding is the provinces are coming to us and saying to us, we need help because the police are not as cooperative with us as they are with you, because we're part of the national structure and it's a national competency. So we certainly don't need their permission to do our work in the provinces. However, our work is made more effective if those provinces are actually aligned with ourselves and carrying out their functions. And the way we've also done that is through those sector indicators that I spoke about. That those sector indicators, we sit at the beginning of each year with our strategic plan, our APPs, and we define sector indicators of what we expect from the provinces during that financial year. And those are then signed off by each province. Each province signs off, we agree with these sector indicators, and they get filed with National Treasury. National Treasury will report to the National Treasury, and provincial treasuries will be reporting on whether those people have spent the money according to those national indicators and have fulfilled their tasks. So there are systems and processes in place that can deal with provinces that don't. I know that two weeks ago we had a meeting with all the provinces where National Treasury had expressed the concern with some provinces not having met their targets that they had agreed with us that they were going to meet and implement. And that process is now being taken forward and could affect those provinces in terms of what funding they get going forward. With regard to the CPS, And the resourcing of CPS, sorry, I realized that I had a thing here, I wasn't sure what it meant. It was your question on resourcing CPS. That what would happen is that in terms of the processes is that the civilian secretariat for police would work out the broad guidelines for how CPS should or shouldn't function, and we're busy, we have worked out policy guidelines of what should happen, how CPS should function at a provincial level, and the provinces would then need to implement it according to those guidelines, including areas of resourcing, because it's not only them that has to resource it. It's a combination of them and SAT. We're not removing from SAT completely the responsibility to engage with CPS, because if you do, then you're going to have the CPS hanging completely away from SAT and outside of SAT and not being, so we're not abdicating SAT of the responsibility, but there's certain things that we would fund, and that would be, for example, the national training manual, the national policy guidelines, the training program for CSS, but there are also certain things that the provinces would fund. We can give you that policy and the breakdown of what they would fund. And then there are certain things where we're not abdicating SAPS's responsibility from needing to provide certain resources to CPS. So I think what may be useful for the committee is to provide you with those breakdowns and the details of that.
Thank you, Chair. In 2011-2012, you received 500 complaints which you attended to. Do you have some more complaints, or what is the situation regarding the complaints? Thank you.
That figure is more than doubled, if not tripled. We can give you the exact number of complaints that we have received, but it's more than doubled, and it may even have tripled. I think we were well over the 1,200 mark, the last that they reported a couple of weeks ago, so I would be able to give you the exact figures, but we are getting an increasing number of complaints. The problem is, as I said, we're not supposed to be handling complaints. We're supposed to be making sure SAC manages their complaints, but we can't hand these complaints over until SAC has a proper system in place to manage them, because it's not going to help a member of the public to say, sorry, we don't deal with your complaints, go to so-and-so. It doesn't inspire confidence from the public. So we have agreed with SAC. We will not hand over these complaints until such time as we are confident that SAC have a system in place. But we're also not leaving it at that. We have engaged with SAC. We had a complaints dialogue last year where we brought together a number of different institutions together with SAC, together with the provinces, to look at how is SAC managing complaints and what needs to be done. And arising out of that, we set up a committee which is looking at assisting SAC with establishing a proper complaint system and proper criteria about how long should it take for a complaint to be managed, when is a complaint managed, at what point do you say that this complaint is now finalized. And we're busy working on that, and we could provide you with a report of both the complaints dialogue and what came out of it, and of the process that has arisen coming out of that complaint. But we've put together a protocol document on how what sort of turnaround community should expect for complaints, etc. Now we are busy working with that on the implementation of that, and until that process is finalized, we will continue to receive and handle complaints until we're at a position where we feel confident in handing those over to SAP. But I could give you the exact figures, but at the last count, I think it was 1,200 complaints that we had dealt with, and that does not include the complaints that the provinces are getting. Remember that provinces also receive complaints. So that is only complaints that have come through to the civilian secretariat for police at a head office level. And then, sorry, just in terms of the chair questions of how many provinces. at this point, we are receiving cooperation, but when I say cooperation, from all nine provinces. All nine provinces are attending all forums. All nine provinces are signing off on the sector indicators. But obviously, the level at which they have progressed depends on their budget, and how much budget they have. So you have a province like KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, and Gauteng, I think, who have a budget 3 or 4 times our budget. And then you have provinces like Free State, Limpopo, that have much smaller budgets. And so I think that that all provinces are cooperating, but the level of cooperation does to a large extent also depend on capacity. But all of them have adopted our monitoring tools and are implementing our monitoring tools. All of them have adopted the sector indicators and are implementing the sector indicators. All of them are aligning their program structures with ourselves at this stage in the game. But obviously what we get out of those provinces does depend on their capacity.
Honourable Mulder.
Thank you, Chair. In September 2012, we had a detective dialogue which came up with some recommendations. What is the status of those recommendations at that moment? Thank you.
Chair, I think, Ms. Omar, when we come to policy and research, we'll report on this. The Honourable Member may be aware that arising out of that, it was agreed that there should be a turnaround strategy developed for detectives. When we started working on that strategy, it was agreed that the Secretariat's role would be to develop a detection policy which deals with the detectives, and that the detectives must then look at the implementation of that policy. And we presented that detection policy to the Portfolio Committee last year. We presented that detection policy to the Portfolio Committee, I can't remember when exactly, last year, and that detection policy is being finalised now and is just awaiting sign-off from the Minister. So, and the detectives are then need to take that policy and look at the implementation. So that's what's arisen from our side out of it, is that detection policy we presented to the Portfolio Committee last year.
Right, thanks. Can we go into the next program?
I'll ask the CFO to just talk about the finances. The next program is the Intersectoral Coordination and Strategic Partnerships, which used to be previously known just as our partnership unit. So I'll ask the CFO just to talk about the budget, and then Mr. Msango to just take us through this.
Thanks, Chairperson. As the Secretary has already mentioned, the program was initially called the Partnerships Unit, and during the process of establishing us as a national department, we had to present a new program budget structure. That resulted in this department, this program being called the Intersectoral Coordination and Strategic Partnerships. The main reasons for that was from National Treasury, that we had to align ourselves with similar programs nationally. And the other one was that I do simplify budgeting and reporting. More specifically, with regard to the database that we submit to National Treasury, it will be simpler if we have fewer programs. So that's why we had to amend our budget structure, program budget structure, to be aligned to National Treasury. The total budget of 20.4 million is 20% of the total departmental budget, and this is the program that has been mostly affected by the restructuring that we alluded earlier to. So it won't be possible to do a trend analysis at this level, or to fit a graph in order to determine the spending patterns. We have to disaggregate these figures to the directorship or sub-directorship level to be able to do a trend analysis. The budget reflects an increase of 59% as compared to the previous financial year. The main factors there is the increased program activity and also the effect of the restructuring. But overall, it's 20% of our total budget. Thank you, Chairperson.
Next program.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I'm vetted, so don't be troubled. Don't be troubled. Just to start from what the CFO has ended, for financial purposes, the intergovernmental civil society and public-private partnerships have been kept together. Then the second one becomes community outreach. But the initial practically were the public-private partnerships, intergovernmental relations, civil society partnership outreach program, which is, we call it community outreach. They deal with various areas. Then all that totals to 20.4 million. The purpose of the first one, which is intergovernmental civil society and public-private partnerships, is to manage and facilitate intergovernmental civil society and public-private partnerships. The strategic objective is to collaborative partnerships between intergovernmental civil society and public partnerships. The following areas will then be your priority areas. Working agreements with civil society, government department, and academic institutions. Then the second one will be anti-crime campaigns. The third will be assessment of community safety forums, South African Police Service rural strategy, and South African Police Service sector policy. The fourth and the last one in this regard will be to facilitating community safety forums working groups. Then community outreach, the purpose will be to promote, encourage, and facilitate community participation in crime prevention initiatives. The strategic objective will be to maximum participation of communities in crime prevention initiatives. The following areas will be your priority. Assessment of social crime prevention programs, monitoring of implementation of community policy forum guidelines in provinces, assessment of provinces implementing community policy forum training programs. Then the risk, one will be lack of participation of stakeholders in joint policy implementation programs. Second one will be readiness of municipalities to implement community safety forum policy. The third will be lack of participation of other cluster departments on community safety forum policy implementation. The fourth will be some provincial justice, crime prevention and security clusters and the development committee not functional, impacting on the community safety forum policy implementation. Mitigation of risk. To submit watertight and comprehensive explanatory memorandum to heads of departments and organizations to motivate for stakeholder participation. The South African Local Government Association to continue facilitating municipal engagement on community safety forum policy implementation. Obtain various head of departments support to participate in justice cluster crime prevention and security cluster programs on community safety forum. That would be the answer.
Thank you for that. Maybe first question from my side, and then you take hands. In a testimony last week, I saw a commissioner when members of the committee asked questions regarding the whole public order policing model that's currently in amendments and to ensure that it functions optimally. It was indicated there will be efforts also to strengthen the public order policing's unit capability in terms of community interaction, outreach, and so forth, really to determine what are the issues in the community. I just want to get a sense, is there interaction with the Secretariat on this issue, or is it a silo approach? I just want to get the indication on that. Honorable Molabasi, Honorable Mbele.
Thank you, Chair. Bande, can you elaborate on this anti-crime strategy? And my other question, Chairperson, is on the GRT. Can you tell us, do you think it's right for the GRT to be commanded from somewhere else? Why I'm saying that is sometimes the church is great to the local area where something happens. And by the time something goes wrong, this TRT, maybe the TRT was involved in the wrong doing. You find that the local police station cannot account for what happens because this TRT was commanded from someone. Do you think it's right the way it's done? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chief. Two questions. The first is, can I please be directed to where I can receive a copy of the CFF policy if it's on the websites or if it can be sent to the committee, please? Because I'm quite keen on the relationship between the CSS and the CPS. Maybe if you can just touch on that as well. And my second question is the secretariat represented on the national task team on gender and sexual orientation based violence that's led by Department of Justice, just in terms of that mandate around strategic collaborative partnerships, and if not, why not, would you be willing to proactively sort of get in that space? And yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Firstly, on the question asked by the chair about the CSS, yes, chair, we are very involved with that. In fact, it's a JCPS project. It's not a SAC project, it's a JCPS project that the National Commission was referring to, and it's their head advisor of. So we are, it's a component of it is how do we draw CSS into this process, into the process of dealing. It's not just about public order policing, but it's about safety and security at a local level generally. So, for example, in an area where water becomes an issue, what role is the CSS playing? How is that role communicated? How does the relationship then exist between them, local government, provincial government, and national government? So it isn't just looking at public order policing, and it's a JCPS project, which, as I say, we're leading together with that. With regard to the anti-crime strategy, we have been rolling out a stolen goods, anti-stolen goods campaign. That if you look at crime in South Africa, all South Africans say they don't support crime. But in reality, how many people get stuck to the back of a truck? It fell off the back of a truck. So the campaign centres, and it's linked to the implementation of the Second Hand Goods Act. So the campaign is centred around that. We have already started with the first aspect of the campaign, because what we're looking at doing with the campaign is, instead of having one campaign, one size fits all for all South Africans, we are all South Africans, but we're not all the same. And so we're looking at breaking this campaign into different kinds of, what message do you need to send to different sectors of the country around different approaches. So we've already started to discuss with the young people through students, representative councils, etc., how the campaign would need to be run to focus on young people, working with SRCs, etc., on getting their input and feedback. We have recently been working with traditional leaders on how do we reach rural areas around this, and have been working with the Ndoni. We have started discussions with the business community about what aspects they would want to. So it wouldn't be a one-size-fits-all campaign that has the same messaging to everybody, because we found that doesn't really work. We've seen Farm Pick and Pay and different business people launch a campaign at that level, and really it hasn't made an impact on people's lives. So that's the process. We are just waiting to present the campaign with the change in administration. We're waiting to re-present that campaign to the current Minister of Peace, but we have already started to roll it out with the Indonesian traditional leaders because of the winter schools that are taking place at this moment, so that the message can begin to go into those schools. The question on the CSF policies, and I'll come back to the TRT question. The question on the CSF policy, yes, the committee in fact has got a copy of that policy. We did submit it last year. It is also on our website. But the committee staff should have a copy of that CSF policy, because we submitted it last year to the committee. But if they don't have a copy, we could we will submit another copy to the committee. And it does deal with exactly what you're talking about, the difference between the CSS and the CPS. And yes, we are part of that national task team. In fact, the rollout plan that has been developed from that committee, our team that has been working on domestic violence and sexual offences within the Secretariat have been very involved in that plan that has been developed by the national task team, interministerial task team on gender-based violence. We also have a number of other gender structures like the gender council, so we are trying to link into all those different councils. With regard to the TRT, basically it would be our view, I think, that every single unit that gets deployed would have unit commanders when they're deployed who would need to take account of what their members are doing. So even if the TRT is established at a provincial level or a national level, every time they deploy in an area, they deploy under the command and control of a commander. And that commander would need to take accountability. And that's one of the things that we're finding, and it's not just with regard to TRT, but regard to command and control within SAP, is that command and control cannot only exist at a national level or at a provincial level and not at the ground level. There are a range of different levels of command and control that must exist within the peace. And those command and control people have got to be held accountable for what the members do. So if you are deploying the TRT to Khayelitsha to deal with the cash and transfer type or whatever, you deploy them under the command and control of a commander. And that commander must be held accountable for what the members do, whether they have the correct uniforms, whether they have the correct equipment, whatever, that commander must be responsible. And ultimately, the failings of that commander become the failings of the supervisor above that commander. And so it comes on. I think that for us, command and control isn't just about having a whole lot of standing orders and national instructions. It's about if you start holding management accountable and the commanders themselves accountable for what their members do, very soon you'll see them start to deal with their members. If you're not holding them accountable, then the members will think they can get away with anything. So that for us is fundamental in that process.
Thank you. There's a question from Honourable Marquet. What is the TRT? And then I just want to deal with one issue that was also raised last week. You indicate that the priority for the subsection will be the assessment of CPFs, the SAPS rural strategy, and SAPS sector policing. Now, there was also concerns raised by members last week about targets for sector policing and the rural strategy. I've seen also in the media that the Human Rights Commission is going to have hearings on rural police, rural policing, farm teams and so on. My question is, and I think it also deals with the issue raised by Honourable Mabija earlier this morning, it's about the impact of SAP, of the Secretariat on SAPs. Okay, you will do these assessments on the rural strategy and sector policing. What is the outcomes? At what forum with SAPs are you taking it up and say, well, our analysis is, this is the issues. The way forward is that. Just to get a sense from the Secretary on all that, because it's very important for us as a committee. You can have these assessments, and we can have a lot of reports in File 13, but what is the impact, in terms of ensuring that there is an effective rural strategy, and also sector policing is now rolled out also to the other stations, apart from those that is indicated in the SAPS annual performance.
Can I just say that the TRT is the tactical response team, and it is a crack unit within the police which has undertaken specialized training, and they are a tactical team, which means they are trained to respond to a tactical situation such as a cash and transfer time. So they generally would be more highly trained in how to deal with being fired on and being able to return fire. So they would be one of your high-level teams that would go into a very dangerous situation and actually have to essentially the tactical response team, the TRTs, would be sent into a situation that has already become violent, such as a cash and transfer type, rather than necessarily into a situation that hasn't yet reached that point of violence, and where they could well be expected to themselves come into danger and have to respond at that level. So that's why they're considered a tactical response unit. And they are also sometimes the guys you see with the black beret, that you would see moving around with the black beret. I'm a beretta, as they call it in some areas. I think the problem for us is that the TRT are often deployed into situations they shouldn't be deployed into. To deploy the TRT into a situation where you are dealing with a Shebeen, which is operating outside of hours, it's not the kind of situation they really should be deployed into cash and transfer type. But I think sometimes they should be deployed into situations where they shouldn't be in, like closing down the Shebeen that has gone on after operating hours. That's not a tactical, that's just an ordinary policing function. It shouldn't be being performed by a tactical unit that is trained to be able to respond to fire with fire. And I think that's one of the things that needs to be assessed, is when and how you deploy the TRT, rather than that the TRT exists, because there's been a lot of complaints from the public that they are super aggressive. But they train to be that because of the type of situations they should be going into. Then they shouldn't be used in situations, in the kind of situations that they're being used. And that for us is more the problem than that they train to be a tactical unit. with regard to the farms, the rural safety, etc., yeah, I think it varies. I think it really does vary. I think that it varies depending on who we're dealing with, the trap. We find some people more accommodating than others, in fact. It's not as cut and dry. For example, on DDA, we've got huge cooperation from SAP on the DDA through this compliance forum. SAPs have really taken on board our role with regard to DDA. And we're seeing that is beginning to have an impact, because it wasn't very good, so it's beginning to have an impact. IPED recommendations have just recently, in the last year, been taken on board by SAP management, and we're starting to see, and I must say starting to see, we know where we want to be in terms of IPED recommendations, but we now have this compliance forum between ourselves and IPED and SAP around those recommendations. But we find there's still areas where you produce a report of so what, and so what. Either so what, or SAP want to argue with you about the report. You know, we don't think it's this, we think it's that. And I think where we have been most successful is where we have set up, for example, these compliance forums, where we have a structured forum through which the outcome of that report is taken forward. But also I think that we would welcome maybe more engagement with the portfolio committee about the nature of our report and being able to get the portfolio, you know, engage the portfolio with committee, provide them with copies of the report so that they can also play a role in ensuring that some of the recommendations, etc., are taken forward, which is something I think that we haven't done enough in the past.
Right. If there's no questions on this matter, let's continue.
Can we ask Mr. Laporta to just deal with the budget for legislation and policy development, and also just to explain the difference between the budget on page 21 and the budget in our OPP, so there's a reason for that.
Okay, Jefferson, the program is legislation and policy development. There was also a name change to the program as a result of the approval of the budget program structure that was required by National Treasury before during the process to proclaim the Secretariat as a national department. The budget is reflective actually of the size of the sub-programs The largest sub-program there is policy development and research, which is 54% of the budget. Legislation, which is 25%, and the DPCI judge, which is 20%. Just to clarify the difference between the budget in the APP and the MTF, and the budget in the legislation, in the presentation, is that in the MTF, the legislation budget was captured as the budget for the DPCI judge. The reason for that was to separate it from the program budget. But the correct classification is as per the presentation, in order to really split program expenditure and the budget of the DPCI judge. The overall expenditure has increased compared to the previous financial year, mainly as a result of the increase in targets and planned activities, but also as a result of the restructuring. It is increased by 105%, which will also make it difficult to really analyze the trend unless we disaggregate the figures to lower level. But overall, the budget is 24%, I think, of the total budget of the Secretariat. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. The sub-program that I manage is the Policy Development and Research Unit. The purpose of the program is to develop policing policies and undertake research in areas of policing and crime. And the strategic objective is evidence-based policies around policing and research around crime and policing. Now, before I discuss my priority areas, I'd just like to say that the NDP is the starting point of all our policies, that's the National Development Plan, and that we benchmark all our work internationally. In terms of priority areas, I'd like to speak about the White Paper on Police, and the Police and the White Paper on Safety and Security, just to give some background to the members, given that it's a new committee. Now, if you recall, the Department of Police was called the Department of Safety and Security before 2009. And there was a 1998 White Paper on Safety and Security. So in 2010, the Civilian Secretariat decided to embark on a review of the 1998 White Paper on Safety and Security. Now, arising out of this process, we found that there was a need for a comprehensive policy on policing, because there was no policy on policing. So we decided to just pass the White Paper on Safety and Security review and start drafting the White Paper on the police. During this process, the state law advisors advised us there was no green paper on the police, so we had to embark and draft the green paper on the police. Now, during this process, we had to go to the 9 provinces on consultation, because it's a green paper, it hasn't been consulted on, so we embarked on a consultation process. In February this year, we finalized the green paper, once the green paper, after the consultation, the green paper becomes a white paper. So we finalized the paper in February this year. We've been awaiting to present to SAPS, but I think it's because of the elections and various reasons we were unable to meet with them. We are going to be meeting with them at the next National Management Forum to present the white paper on the police. Now, just to give you a little idea of what the white paper on the police is, it's basically a broad overarching policy framework, and like I said, flowing from the National Development Plan, and it reaffirms the principles of good governance of policing in a democracy. It talks about professionalizing the police, it looks at integrity of the members, and it talks about, and to ensure that they are organized and structured to deliver on their constitutional mandate. We hope to take the police paper to Cabinet in August, and then hopefully come to this committee after August. So that paper's been done. We've continuing now the review of the White Paper on Safety and Security. Now, this paper is a macro policy. It's no longer a Department of Police paper. It's a JCPS cluster. It's broad. It's overarching. It cuts across different departments, but also different levels. So it's looking at the provincial and the local levels particularly. So we're working together with Department of Social Development, Department of Education, and a variety of the different departments involved in the JCPS cluster, and it may extend beyond the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security cluster, that's the JCPS. Now this, the focus of this policy basically is going to be addressing citizen safety in relation to the space they live in, because it's on safety, it's not policing. Policing is just one subset of safety and security paper. It also flows from the National Development Plan and the issues of safety, but we also look at the National Security Strategy and what's been said in the National Security Strategy. So it's also cross-cutting. We're working with the JCPS, the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster, DGs, and also DEFCON on this, because it's of a cross-cutting nature.
Explain what DEFCON is, because we keep referring to it. Development Committee is a committee that sits, you have the DG cluster, and then just below that you have the Development Committee, which is like the official, the workhorse for the Director General cluster. So just so that when we refer to the Development Committee, it's a committee of officials from cross-cutting departments dealing with safety issues.
Thank you. Chair, the next priority area is the policy on serial murder and serial rape. Now, the Secretary mentioned earlier that we had 22 women's organizations who sent us a letter, including the Minister, indicating a few issues on various reporting gender crimes, but also on linkages on serial murder and rape. So we've decided to embark on two policies. Now, the serial murder and serial rape policy, we're working with the Investigative Psychology Unit of the SAPS. They basically look at serial cases. They have been in existence for a very long time. Not many people know about them. So what the policy focusing here on is looking to address the identification, investigation, and management of serial rape and serial murder. Currently, most of the rape and murder series are identified through DNA linkages, that's the DNA database. But what we're saying is that the SAPS at police station level need to look at modus operandi in the area, because sometimes we see that it cuts across different station precincts, but also different provinces. So what we're doing is we want to focus on this. And linked to that is the draft policy on reducing barriers to reporting crimes on gender-based violence. Now, I mentioned that this two ladies organization sent us a letter indicating the barriers. And let me just tell you, some of the barriers that they are talking about is that the number of women reporting rape and domestic violence incidents are too low, right? And there's a study done by the Medical Research Council and Gender Links, which showed that in 1 in 13 women raped by a non-partner reported this to the police, and 1 in 25 women raped by their partners reported this to the police. And it's a very low reporting rate. So we're looking at the low reporting rate firstly, then we're looking at the perception that women don't trust the police to do anything, and that's why they don't report the case. Another area we're looking at is that position that nothing meaningful would result from the criminal justice system. So once a case is reported to the police, what happens to it after that? You know, how far does it go? So we'd like to look at the barriers. There's just a few that I've identified. We know that it's not the police's role to prevent domestic violence, but what we are suggesting is that they can prevent repeat serial offending of domestic violence cases and also serial rapes and murders. That's just, in a nutshell, what we're doing on the barriers to reporting crimes of gender-based violence. The other research projects on trends reporting on policing, I think the Honourable Paula Barnard asked a question on this previously. Our focus this year on the trends report is basically looking at drug and human trafficking in the continent. And let me tell you why this came about. The Civilian Secretariat for Police, we based in 1999, became a member of the International Center for the Prevention of Crime. Now, this is an international body dedicated to the exchange of ideas and knowledge on safety initiatives that's happening across the world. So the Secretariat in 1999 was a member. The membership was then transferred over to SAPS. But last year, SAPS met with us, Division of Visible Policing, and indicated that we are the more appropriate lead agency to take on this, given the white paper on safety and security in the National Crime Prevention Strategy. So we did this. Now, the ICPC has a colloquium once a year, and the focus this year is on drug and human trafficking. So what we've decided is let us do our trend report on that to feed into this colloquium. So we will be focusing on this. We're looking at the continent just to set the African agenda and not let it just be a European or a Canadian or a US colloquium. It's going to be a big project.
Thank you very much. We're going to go for lunch now, and we will, if we can come back at 1:15, then we'll continue with the briefing. Thanks a lot.